And welcome in to hour number three. Darren Donick and Chase. We now have visual evidence, Chase McCabe, of Darren McFarland post-surgery. Yes. Giving the thumbs up. Heavily medicated.
Who does he think he is? Like, got injured on the football field, he's getting carted off, and he's thumbs up like he's okay?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those.
I'd like to see two thumbs up like he's paying me off for the South Carolina quarterback bet that he still owes me.
He's sending selfies. His wife, Lauren, sent a picture. There you go, Mitch. That, you know, he is out of surgery. He's doing well.
He looks fantastic.
Spectacular.
Physical specimen.
Hey, he looks like he feels great right now. So,
well, Mitch, let's start with this. Mitch Light, of course, Athlon Sports, college football editor, also does the sideline for Vanderbilt football. We're going to talk to Derek Mason next hour, but I know there is a lot of concern right now. We, a week ago, discussed they got the win against Northern Illinois, but there was a lot of question marks as to how that would translate when they got back into league play against not an upper-tier team. Ole Miss, we illustrated how important that game was going to be. Both to lose the game was one thing, but the way they lost, to not really do anything that they are designed to do, stuff like what's the feeling right now? It could not have been good.
Yeah. My term would be alarmingly uncompetitive
in
that game. And, you know, to be fair, it was 10-6 at the half, and Vanderbilt recovered from a slow start. And I talked about this in the air starting. For whatever reason, if you guys can think back to previous Vanderbilt wins over Ole Miss would go right down the field the first two possessions and score. I think Shea Patterson 3 years ago looked like he was going to put up 60, went down. I think there was 10-0 or 14-0. Last year in Nashville, Jordan Tamu, and that offense went right down. It was 10-0, I think. So it was a similar feeling there. Ole Miss gets two easy scores, and then the Vanderbilt defense kind of settles in. I actually thought, and this is not to try and put a positive spin, just usually when you give up that many yards rushing, especially when you're playing a big team like a Georgia, it's like 10 yards, 15 yards, 10 yards, 12 yards. They're just destroying you like that. Ole Miss is more like 0 yards, 3 yards, 30 yards, right. 70 yards. It was Vanderbilt's defense won, quote-unquote, won a lot of defensive downs, but then they just could not stop the big play, and a lot of those big plays – Vanderbilt seemingly had a guy in position. And to me, that's been the theme of the season, is guys taking bad angles in the secondary, missing tackles at the line of scrimmage. To me, I was more concerned about the offense. Just continue to not threaten the opposing team downfield. All the passes are short, and trying to like get a guy like Kalijah Lipscomb to make a guy miss or something like that. Jaron Pinckney not involved again. Ole Miss heading into that game had very good run stats, so I was not surprised that they kind of bottled up Keyshawn Vaughn, but their passing stats had been horrible. A team like Cal, who's not a very good offensive team, threw for like 350 against them, and it just felt like Vanderbilt just was not threatening them down the field at all. So that was a concern. So, yeah, it was a disappointing performance all around. You know, got off to a slow start. You know, I'm sure you were here. I don't know how much of the game you saw, and I think it might have been after Ole Miss's first score. Vanderbilt calls for fair catch on a kickoff, so they would have got the ball at the 25, but Justice Shelton Mosley drops it and has to scramble to pick it up, so the ball's at the 7. And then there's a penalty, and they get backed up. Ole Miss misses an early field goal, but Vanderbilt had too many men on the field, so ball moves up 5 yards, and they make the field goal. When you're on the road and you're struggling like that, you have to be perfect, and your margin for error is so slim. Now, they only did have 3 penalties, and that's something that had been plaguing them earlier, but that one penalty cost them 3 points.
Yeah. So we knew this would be the case. The loser of this game's outlook doesn't look good. It looks kind of grim. So where do they go from here?
Good question. I mean, they play UNLV this week. They're a 16-point favorite. UNLV is not a very good team. You would hope, you would expect them to win that game, but that doesn't really solve any issues, you know.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think when you go back to work and you have to start somewhere.
Yes.
Right?
I'm interested to see what happens at the quarterback position. Derek Mason's, I think, press conference is actually going on right now. I think I heard a snippet from a radio interview. It might have been on this station earlier today or somewhere else, where he hinted that, you know, they trust both quarterbacks. They have to figure out what's the best going forward. That's a different tune than they've had so far when it's been Riley Neal has been the starter, even some games when Deuce Wallace has come in. So, I don't know if a quarterback switch is the answer. Deuce Wallace hasn't been any better or worse when he's gone in, but he hasn't. The offense hasn't received a jolt with him in there. So I don't know what the answer. The hope, Willie, is if you're looking for improvements down the road, is that the offensive line gets better as it's, you know, those same five guys play together. But they made a switch on Saturday. Grant Miller, who'd been the starter for the first four games, was replaced, I think, after the second series by Sean McMoore. Now McMoore's listed on top of the depth chart there. So maybe there's a blocking issue. The snaps seem to be okay. So I don't know where you go from here, Willie, because some of the games that you looked at as winnable or as toss-ups, if you play like that, they're not winnable right now.
So let's now switch our attention to Tennessee with their performance against Georgia, where, you know, they, when you say alarmingly uncompetitive for Vanderbilt, the opposite is the case, right? So you're trying to sort of gauge, if you're Tennessee, what does it mean that they hung around? They fought. They gave themselves a chance. They stayed in the game for quite some time against a really tough Georgia team.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if you guys remember, but leading up to the Vanderbilt-Georgia game, I referenced the Vanderbilt-Georgia game from last year where Vanderbilt played really well in the first half, but it just shows you how good you have to be to stay with a good team, because Vanderbilt played a good half of football at Georgia last year. It was down 21-6. I thought I had the same feeling after rewatching and following this game that Tennessee played a really good half of football, but they still found themselves down 26-14 because you make a few mistakes late.
Huge.
And then Georgia's up, you know. What's the feeling there? Again, you played maybe your best half of football for the season, and you're down 12 points at home. You have to be perfect to beat a team like Georgia.
It illustrates what they're up against.
Right. So big picture, knowing what all of us know about the history of this program, it's kind of alarming that you're so optimistic about being down 26-14 home. But in the scope of what's going on with this team this year, it's definitely a positive step in the right direction. And you know, is Maurer the right answer at quarterback? You know, he looked good in the first half, but then as a team, they kind of got overwhelmed in the second half. So, you know, it beats the alternative of being down 21-0. And, you know, we've seen some of Jeremy Pruitt's teams, you know, the margin of victory was, you know, great, 39 points. But I guess it's a step in the right direction. But, you know, Mississippi State coming in this week, I think the spread's a little high. I give Tennessee a really good chance in that game. I don't think that Mississippi State team is too strong. This is a huge, huge, huge game for Jeremy Pruitt. They cannot take a step back and look bad and make some of the mistakes. You would think that the quarterback switch, although I guess he hasn't really announced who's starting this week, you'd expect it to be Maurer.
Got to be, right?
Yeah. You would hope that he would have given them a jolt on offense, but they need to play well this week.
The thing for me, Mitch, is if they had played like they did in the first half – to start the season against Georgia State and BYU, this thing looks completely different right now, because that was a competitive team. Even though Georgia pulls away and Georgia shows that they are the much better team.
But that's I understand, agree with you.
You know where I'm going.
But that's also a sign of a well-coached, mature team that doesn't need losses to Georgia State and BYU to play like this. Like, they should have been ready to play in week one like this.
Right, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
Now, if he can correct it and he's showing signs that it is being corrected, then okay. Then, you know, if you get a win against Mississippi State or a win against South Carolina, you know, come out and at least just show signs of life against Alabama like you did against Georgia. Then you go and you evaluate and you say, all right, well, they're getting better, because that's what you expect out of a team with a coach in year two after you make a quarterback change. But they have to put it all together.
And don't limp to the finish line like they did last year when they needed one win to be bowl eligible and they got blown out by Missouri and Vanderbilt.
Mississippi State, that's a key part of this equation here. It reminds me a little bit of what we were talking about going into the Vanderbilt Ole Miss game, where Mississippi State, from their perspective, is probably sitting there going, we have got to have this one. We play in the SEC West. There's no cupcakes. I mean, this is our opportunity to grab a conference win. We have to have it, right?
Yeah, and Mississippi State and Tennessee don't play a lot because they're in different divisions. And over the course of history, you know, Mississippi State as a program has to look and say, there's not many times where we're going to Knoxville and we have the supposed better team and we're a 7-point favorite. They need to take advantage because they're 3-2 right now. Still have to play LSU, at Texas A&M, Alabama, you know, Ole Miss. They still have Abilene Christian. So they're probably going to get bowl eligible, but do they want a 6-6 season?
Yeah, I mean, just stay on pace for where they have the bar set, right?
Right. But I don't have a ton of faith in this team right now. You know, last time we saw them 2 weeks ago, they weren't competitive in a home loss to Auburn. They've had quarterback issues. The defense predictably has regressed. You just don't lose that type of, you know, unless you're Clemson or Alabama, you don't lose that type of star power on defense and not take a step back. To me, it's the second year under Joe Moorhead, and they don't look like Joe Moorhead's Penn State teams. Now, they don't have Saquon Barkley or Trace McSorley, but they had, you know, a pretty good quarterback last year. So we sound like a broken record. Oh, this is a big game for this team. This is a big game for this team. But when you have these teams that are sort of in the middle or the bottom half of the league and they're playing each other, they need to win and they need to play well.
We'll take a break. When we come back, Mitch Light will talk more about the SEC. We'll go around the league. There's some huge games coming up here. Florida got the big win last week, and we'll look ahead to some of the matchups coming up. Stay tuned. We're talking college football for the next couple segments here from Pete and Terry's Tavern. Remember, our first drawing for the tickets, 12:45. So if you're coming by here on Demumbrian and the Sobro entrance here, Pete and Terry's Tavern, drop your name in. It's lunchtime. We got the great lunch specials here, and we have four pairs of tickets to give away. If you drop your name in, you're eligible for all four drawings right here on 102.5 The Game. We're coming back. Pete and Terry's Tavern is the place to be. We are 30 minutes away from our first ticket drawing. Grab the lunch special here.
Chase, dancing like that? Is that just an added bonus?
That's an added bonus if you want to consider that.
You
got more room. They're not here. You got more room to move.
Yeah.
My dance skills are not very good.
There is a little more real estate.
That's not a shocking development, by the way, that they're not good. No offense.
Somebody told me, well, I figured that because you're pretty white. So I'm like, yeah, I dance like a white boy. It is what it is.
So, Chase, talking a little college football here with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports.
Yeah, so I kind of want to start as we go around the SEC before we get into the actual games, because we do this around this time every year, and I know we've had the conversation about Tennessee and things like that, but the hot seat for some of these coaches. One that really pops out for me is Will Muschamp at South Carolina, because they're 2-3, and, you know, yes, they've gotten a couple of wins here and there, but right now, that's a very inconsistent football team, and I just wonder if things continue. Now, they have some games coming up that they, like Tennessee, are winnable, that they could win, but it's going to, I think, depend on how they play moving forward if Will Muschamp is the guy.
My prediction is he will be back, and I know endorsements don't mean a ton, but Ray Tanner, the AD, who's an old coach who hired him, has gotten his back, you know, said so publicly many times. I think the fact that Jake Bentley, their senior quarterback, goes down helps him. You know, we knew this year was going to be a struggle win-wise because that schedule is so difficult. That's why that North Carolina game was so difficult. But I think he'll be back, barring a collapse. You know, they won their last game convincingly 24-7 over Kentucky. You'd expect them to lose this week at Georgia, and then they get Florida. But after that Georgia-Florida, you know, they could go on a run and win some games there. So, I understand the talk. But I think he'll be back.
Now, what about a team that Vanderbilt just faced? And I think a lot of us have looked at that game as being very important for both teams from that aspect. But Matt Luke at Ole Miss.
Yeah, talking to Parrish Alford, who's been on the show over the years, covers Ole Miss from the paper out of Tupelo. You know, he kind of summed it up that, like, a large portion of the fan base did not want Matt Luke to get the job to begin with. Thought, you know, they were promised a national search. Didn't happen. You know, everyone knows Matt Luke's story. He comes from an Ole Miss family. No one loves Ole Miss as much as he does, all that stuff. But it's about winning games. And, you know, there's a new AD. Right now it's an interim AD, Keith Carter, a former basketball player. I don't think he would be in the position to make decisions. They have a new chancellor, too, very controversial. So there's a leadership issue there. For that reason and the fact that they are so painfully young and they just hired two new coordinators, and I don't know what those coordinator contracts are. That's another issue, too. Those coordinators, they hired two of the last three Pac-12 coaches of the year. My guess is they, and I guess I should know this, but they have multi-year contracts. So let's say the coordinators have multi-year contracts. You have new leadership in the university. You got Matt Luke, who played there. I think he'll be back as well.
Yeah, well, really? Okay. That's interesting, but it's a good point on the coordinators. And then the only other one that I really think is just is hot or warm or however you want to put it is Chad Morris at Arkansas. And, you know, he's in year two. He inherited a mess, but it's not getting any better.
Yeah, again, I think, and not to be boring and say all these coaches are going to be back.
It's Everybody's
not,
back.
Yeah, I think he'll be back, too. I think 2 years is just too, you know, too short of not giving him enough chance. Now, the athletic director, Hunter Yurachek, who used to work at Vanderbilt and was a former Houston athletic director, did not hire him, inherited him, but shortly thereafter. And, you know, I just think 2 years is too short. They played well last time out against Texas A&M in Arlington, but they've done that repeatedly. So I think he'll be back as well.
So I have said this pretty much every week since the college football season started. I have said, you know, Florida keeps winning. I like them, but I just don't know if I completely believe in them yet. Well, they beat Auburn. They did something I didn't think they were going to do because I really like Auburn, and it was a fun game to watch, but Florida comes out with the win. Do I need to start thinking that they are for real?
I'm not going to tell you how to think, Chase. But, you know, I've talked about this week. To me, remember like 5 to 10 years ago when the SEC was awesome but the quarterback play was average?
Yeah.
That felt like an old school SEC game where you just had two really good defenses, athletes all over the place, mediocre quarterback play. You know, now there's good quarterbacks all over the place. I understand what you're saying, and I kind of agree with you. Like, Florida won a big-time game, but they didn't alleviate a lot of concerns I have with them going forward, like their offensive line. If LaMichael Pirine doesn't make that big run, which I get it, it's part of the game, their offensive stats aren't good. They didn't run the ball well besides that play, and that was kind of a broken play. Auburn should have made that tackle there. They turned the ball over a lot in that game. Both teams did, so I give credit for just a great home win. But that doesn't change my opinion of them too much. I think they're a top 10 team, but they're not in that tier with, I think we all agree, there's like those six teams right now that appear to be better than the others. I don't think.
And they play one this year.
Yeah, they play at LSU, and then they got Georgia coming up. So I still don't consider them a major threat to Georgia, but you know, obviously that's a rivalry game and a neutral field. But I think that's a fair assessment. Give them credit for keep winning games, but they're not really. And I think it's a credit to the program. It's a credit to Dan Mullen that they're so highly ranked, and they are where they are in year two with an offensive line that is not SEC championship worthy.
So I take it that you're not surprised that they're almost a 2-touchdown underdog at LSU.
Yeah, I think this is a great spot for LSU coming off of a win, which they did barely broke a sweat, although it was like, you know, 100 degrees down there at LSU. But they beat a Utah State team that's pretty good. They have them to 3 yards per play. They have played two solid Group of Five programs in Georgia Southern and Utah State and just dominated them, which we have not seen in years past from LSU. So I think LSU, this is a great spot for them. With Florida coming off banged up, we don't know about Kyle Trask right now. You know, that was an emotional game last week, and then now they go on the road. And that's, you know, not a bigger topic and throw UCF into this, but,
yeah,
you know, that's always been my take on UCF, whether or not, or Boise State, whether or not they were true, you know, playoff worthy or top 10 worthy. Really good teams, really good rosters, but we're, you know, teams like UCF never have to go to, you know, hosting Auburn, then at LSU the next week. And a lot of people said earlier this year, you know, that after hosting Stanford, they go on the road against Pitt, UCF, and that's maybe why they lost, because they got banged out, you know, bruised 2 weeks in a row, and then they go play a really good Cincinnati team and they lose. So sorry for the tangent there, but I just think there's not many teams in the country, you know, some Big Ten East teams. But other than that, you know, we got to play Auburn at home 1 week, and then you go to LSU the next week. That's just difficult to do.
Yep.
But don't you think for LSU, and look, they went on the road, they won at Texas. That was obviously a test for them, but that was probably their biggest test to this point, and now they have Florida at home. I feel like LSU's schedule hasn't been, you know, quite that of what Florida has faced and will face moving forward.
Right. Fair, but they've also dominated teams. And you know,
they really have.
Sometimes you have to deal with, you know, the schedule you have. In Florida State that 1 year, 2014 maybe, the ACC wasn't very good, but they just dominated everyone. And when you're sort of like Clemson needs to do going forward, if you're not playing great teams, you need to dominate them. And it's really, you know, you could point to some defensive, is this as dominant of a defense athletically as LSU's had in the past? Maybe not. But, you know, I don't fault them for their schedule because they're playing so well.
So Texas A&M, when they hired Jimbo Fisher, I'm trying to think rationally.
Don't think this is talk
Don't
radio,
do that.
Really.
Well, I know this is also the SEC.
Yeah. When do SEC fans ever think
and
rationally?
And there is a mentality, I think, sometimes when you say, well, we've paid X amount of dollars. We've paid top dollars, so this should be the result. Realistically, it was going to take some time. But as Texas A&M now hosts Alabama, I just do wonder what the back. It does not look like they're prepared to beat a team like Alabama, and maybe they'll surprise people. But it's an intriguing matchup because if Alabama does what they've been doing to just about everybody, I'm curious what the mentality or the state of mind of the Texas A&M people will be.
I'm going to put a spin on a cliche that you hear a lot. Well, the other team has scholarships too. You know, younger players say that. In the SEC, it's like, well, the other team has a $40 million coach too. You know, Jimbo Fisher's paid a lot of money to win games. But he's going against Gus Malzahn, who's a really good coach, and then he's going against, obviously, Nick Saban. So everyone's trying to win big time, and It is only, you know, year two, and we talked about kind of the mindset of the Texas A&M fan base. As you alluded to a couple of weeks ago, I do a radio spot there every week, and the host there and the people that you know, he's around, it was like, we've got Jimbo Fisher. We're going to win this game because we've got Jimbo and they've got Gus Malzahn. Well, you know what? He got outplayed badly in that game. So they are not ready right now. They're not running the ball very well. Jashawn Corbin, their top running backs out for the year. Isaiah Spiller, their true freshman, came in, has not run the ball well the last few weeks. I don't think they're positioned to take advantage of Alabama's perceived weaknesses, which is, you know, that Ole Miss ran for like 250 yards against them. That's not A&M's game right now. So the game is in College Station, but I don't see a way where they really slow down Alabama. I expect a big Alabama win.
When we come back, we'll hit the national picture and have Mitch go around and talk about some of the key matchups coming up. Stay tuned. Remember, at 12:45, we draw for the first pair of Predator tickets as they take on the Sharks tonight, big one, here in Smashville. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase from Pete and Terry's Tavern. Come on by and register to win tickets for tonight's Predator-Sharks game. We'll get back into some hockey a little bit later in the show. Also, don't forget Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason will join us for his weekly chat at 1 o'clock. His press conference going on right now as we speak over on the Vanderbilt campus. Mitch, before we get back into the college football national scene, congratulations to your New York Yankees for being the first team to advance to the LCS.
Thank you very much, Will. I know that as the Mets fan you are, I know that comes from the heart. I know you really, you know, just feel really happy for those small market Yankees, you know, really dealt a tough hand. They, you know, overcome so much adversity. Actually, they did this year, all those injuries.
They did. And also, you know, you assume that every Yankee is making $20 million a year, but they really
have a lot of homegrown.
This
is not an old school.
Or guys that were really smart pickups that really aren't expensive.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Cameron Maben, who they've got some good players who
Cameron
aren't.
Cameron Maben is quite the story.
Yeah.
Because I remember him in Atlanta and then everywhere else he's played.
Yeah. But yeah, at one time he was one of the top prospects in baseball. But
did
never,
he come up through Detroit?
He was, I think, Florida. I mean, he's been traded a bunch of times as
he's
a
played
quote,
for a lot of teams.
Prospect?
Yeah. When is the, your Braves, when is the Walker Buehler, when's the Walker Buehler Nationals? Is that tomorrow, I assume?
Yeah, game
off
five
day,
tomorrow.
Off day today. Don't pay attention to the National League too much, you know.
But game five tomorrow because, you know, load up the bases twice and can't get anything out of it.
I know. My timeline is full with Braves and Cardinals fans, just people I know in here. Obviously, it's just I just sit back and watch. You know, I'm sure you guys have talked about this, but you know, every sport has its own dynamics. But I think there's nothing more nerve-wracking than postseason baseball.
Oh,
just
man.
The pitch by pitch and the luck involved, hard hit balls versus bloops and stuff like that, and just it's agonizing.
First big test coming up for Oklahoma, the Red River Shootout. Very intriguing matchup last year in which Texas won in a wild track meet kind of game. Oklahoma, a double-digit favorite. Does that surprise you at all?
No, and concentrate to these stats because they're really amazing. Oklahoma is averaging first in the country in total offense. They're averaging 90 yards per game more than any other team. But break it down. They lead the nation with 7.8 yards per rush, and they also lead the nation with 12.7 yards per passing attempt. So they're the most efficient running team and the most efficient passing team. Now, they haven't gotten into the heart of their conference schedule yet. They played UCLA, who's not good. They played Texas Tech. They have not played the most difficult schedule, but I don't care. Those stats are mind-boggling. Texas has been banged up. They've had some injuries on both sides of the ball. Did not play great last week against West Virginia. So I am not surprised, but this sounds like a cliche, but in this series, really, there's been some weird things happen. Charlie Strong's had some Texas teams that look like they didn't belong on the field with some of Bob Stoops' Oklahoma teams, and they've won those games. So I think Oklahoma's going to win. And if they win impressively, you know, they win by two touchdowns or something like that, and then, you know, you kind of compare what LSU did with Texas, we might have to start rethinking Oklahoma because I think everyone puts them in that top six with all those teams, but not many people are really putting them in the top the top half of that. But if they win comfortably, I think you have to start considering it.
I watched Michigan grind it out at home against Iowa,
a
10-3. How many college football games do you see in 10-3? Iowa this week hosts Penn State. Iowa can create that really good home field atmosphere. I'm really curious to see what Penn State brings to the table, still unbeaten right now.
Yeah, Penn State has won its two Big Ten games, Maryland 59-0, Purdue 35-7. Now, they played a Purdue team that's been banged up all over the place. Real intriguing game. I think Penn State's kind of laying low. You know, I think a lot of people who were really high on them kind of stepped back after that close win over Pitt and kind of changed their opinion, but they've been very good on both sides of the ball. Now, they're not as stout defensively, I don't think, as Michigan is up front. Iowa's had trouble running the ball against good teams, 112 yards against Iowa State, one versus Michigan. A lot of that was sacks involved there. So I think this is a statement game for Penn State. They're going to open up a lot of eyes nationally. I think they go on the road and win this game.
Speaking of Michigan, I was watching their game.
By the way, I watched a decent amount of that game from we were eating lunch in Oxford.
Yeah.
It was one of those games where Iowa, you just had no confidence they were going to score. Like, you could have given the ball on 10 straight possessions, placed it at the 50 with a new set of downs, and never thought they were going to tie that game up.
It was kind of that way. But I happened to see some of the pregame coverage, or not pregame, but a halftime coverage, and they had Urban Meyer on the set. He made an interesting point. He said, in this day and age of college football, and you've pointed this out before, you guys do this in your Athlon thing, the explosive plays, when you guys do the numbers. He said, you have got to have big plays, and that is what is lacking for Michigan right now. And that's puzzling to a lot of Michigan people. They've got all these recruits, and they are not getting the big plays. They're not getting the easy points.
And they're, you know, brought in Josh Gattis to run the up-tempo offense, catch defense off guard, and all that stuff, and it's not happening. You know,
and he said in the run game in particular, they're just, and he pointed out the stats. He said they had a couple of big ones against Middle Tennessee, but other than that, you can't find a 20-plus yard gain in the running game.
And that makes so much sense now. The first coach who said that to me, I remember talking to Bobby Johnson once at Vanderbilt, and he's just like, it's hard to march up and down the field. I don't care who you are, to not make a mistake, to string together four or five first downs. You need big plays, and that's why you look at some defenses that are successful, like Washington last year. I remember the stat. They allowed one play over 40 yards last year.
Wow.
That is amazing. Like, the next best nationally was like five plays over 40 yards. Some of that's, you know, fluke. Can you replicate that year over year? I don't know. But that's an underrated stat that if you just prevent the big plays and make teams drive the length of the field, you're going to have a lot of success.
I got one more, and then Chase, you hit him on a couple, but I think there's some people. There's not a lot of Memphis fans in our listening area, but here they are, 5-0, number 23. They go to Temple, and of all places, Temple, you know, they're sitting there at 4-1. Memphis about a touchdown favorite on the road, trying to go 6-0. Now UCF has shown that they're human. They've lost a couple of times here. Memphis, all of a sudden, league championship not out of the realm here.
Yeah, Cincinnati obviously very good too, with some good wins over UCF and UCLA at home. Memphis is very good. They beat Navy at home. My feeling in that game was if Malcolm Perry, the Navy quarterback, didn't get hurt, Navy could have won that game on the road. I have some questions about Memphis defensively. They gave up 33 points last week to UL Monroe. Temple's good. They got a good quarterback. Defense has been strong. New coach Carey came from Northern Illinois. So they have a big two-week stretch here. They go at Temple, then they go Tulane, then at Tulsa, SMU. So the back half of their schedule is more difficult. I do not see them winning the league. I think Cincinnati is the best team in the league. I think the Memphis-SMU game will be really – that could be for the West in November 2nd at Memphis. But I know that the folks in Memphis are having some fun. The columnist of the Commercial Appeal wrote a column this week just saying that, you know, Memphis is the best football program in the state of Tennessee, and it has been for a while. Kind of hard to argue if you're, you know, if you're Tennessee and Vanderbilt right now. It's been an amazing turnaround, and not to jump around too much, who's the guy that turned it around? Justin Fuente. I'm stunned. I know Virginia Tech went down to Miami and won, but I'm stunned that Virginia Tech is kind of backsliding because, you know, Mike Norvell deserves a lot of credit in Memphis, but you always look to the guy who really turned it around, and Fuente got it going there.
It's funny that you bring up Cincinnati because that's exactly where I was going to go and ask you about them. They play Houston, and you think they're going to win the league. I've watched a few of their games because Ryan Porth, our PD, is a big fan. My best friend's a big fan, so I kind of keep up with them.
They've been on like Thursday night, Friday night.
Yeah, they've been on the national stage. And you go out, you know, to the group of five, The AAC, I guess, is probably the top of the group of five when it comes to conferences. But
they'll call it, they call it the Power Six.
The Power Six, yeah. Well, but, I don't think anyone agrees with them.
That is, they can call themselves whatever they want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I really like the game that they play.
Yeah, I do. They got, you know, Desmond Ritter's a really good quarterback, and Mike Warren, his numbers aren't quite as good this year at running back, but they've got a good defense. They've held, you know, they lost to Ohio State 42-0, but they've held every other team to 24 points or less. This is a huge game for them against Houston, obviously, without Derrick King, because after that, Tulsa, East Carolina, Connecticut, South Florida. They win this game, they will be undefeated in the league before they play Temple and then at Memphis late in the year. So they've got some big games late in the year, but they have done, you know, they just, and that's a, Cincinnati is a program because they've been good under multiple coaches. You know, Butch Jones, Mark D'Antonio, I'm missing someone. But, you know, there's some programs like that, they pop up when they get a really good coach and the coach leaves. They, you know, they fall off.
They slip. Yeah.
Yeah, but Cincinnati has. They've had their down
Tuberville
years,
was there for
yeah,
a while.
Tuberville was there and actually didn't do great there. But they've been successful under multiple coaches. So that says a lot about kind of the infrastructure there.
Is Luke Fickell going to be one of the hot names that's out there?
I think he probably will be. And one of the coaching sites, you know, there's coaching Scoop, that one of them had something about where evidently his buyout, you know, he's gettable. He doesn't have a very high buyout there. And if you're a Big Ten school, you know, I know some teams have swung and missed on Big Ten coordinators, and it's a crapshoot. You never know. But I've been really impressed with the way they've turned it around. And I was totally wrong on that hire. I thought it was kind of a boring hire. You know, you're in Cincinnati, you just hire the Ohio State defensive coordinator. You know, how much, you know, more typical can you get than that? But he's been great. He has done a really good job there.
There's some interesting games on the 2:30 slate. We've talked about Alabama A&M, of course, on CBS or the SEC. Florida State, Clemson, not what it used to be. Clemson should win that. But one that does intrigue me out of the Pac-12 is Washington State, Arizona State. Again, I'm infatuated with Herm Edwards.
Herm!
And Arizona State and the job that they're doing. 4-1. On the season, 18th ranked team in the country.
Yep, there are some good games. You know, Washington State's already 0-2 in the league, and they still have road games at Arizona State, Oregon, Cal, and Washington. This to me is interesting because it's the first game back for Washington State since Mike Leach tore his guys apart. You know, in the PC world we live in now, it wasn't exactly you know maybe the smartest move, but we'll find out. But Arizona State, you know, Daniels, the freshman quarterback's getting better. There's some Washington, Arizona. We're here, what, in early October. Arizona's 2-0 in the league, and Washington's 1-2 in the league. Who would have thought that? So we're kind of getting to the point in October where everyone's playing conference games, and so many of these games kind of will swing how a season's going.
And then you got Michigan State at 4-2, which they're, you know, kind of struggling there. Don't look great, but then Wisconsin, which I think has been a buzzsaw.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, they've been dominant on both sides of the ball. Michigan State's been inconsistent. Their offense has been bad some games against Arizona State. They've been better in other games. But defensively, they haven't been on point. They gave up 31 to Indiana, 34 to Ohio State last week. I really like Wisconsin this game. I think it's going to be a lot of the pressure on the quarterback. I think Michigan State's good enough to slow down Jonathan Taylor and make Jack Cohn, the quarterback, beat them. You know, what's been Wisconsin's issue in recent years? When teams can kind of slow down the running game a little bit, they hadn't had the quarterback, you know, Hornibrook, who's now at Florida State, to beat you. We'll find out a lot more about Jack Cohn this week.
I have a way for both of you to make a lot of money.
Please tell us.
That is.
Willie's perked up.
Wow, yeah.
You go talk to somebody that's on the playoff committee because they will pay you to take their spot because that's how hard this is going to be this year.
Really?
I think Bobby Johnson would pay Willie Donick a lot of money
to take his spot. Because, I mean, think about it. And a lot can change between now and the end of the season.
There are some possibilities for some very difficult decisions
coming up.
But Bill Connolly, former from SB Nation and now at ESPN.com, longtime contributor to Athlon Sports with his advanced stats, had a post. You should look it up. It seems that way, but it's really hard to go undefeated. Like, the odds of all of those teams, all six of those teams going undefeated is like 0.2%.
Yeah, right.
A lot of it will sort itself out.
Because they're going to have to play each other.
Yeah.
But I do think that most years it comes down to that fourth spot and three or four teams, you know, at least two or three, have a stake and say, we could be that fourth team. We have a good, solid argument to be that fourth team.
See, this year I think it's different because I think there are some really good teams that are going to be left out. Like last year, people always rip on Notre Dame. Well, they didn't belong. Well, you know what? Almost any team in that spot was going to get beat by Clemson. Yeah. Like, there wasn't a great fourth team. This year, I think there might be a great fifth team or sixth team. So I think it's going to be make for a great playoff, but it's also going to make for some teams that are pretty bummed that they don't get in.
And right now, I would say they'd probably be Georgia, LSU, or Oklahoma would be one of those teams being left out. Now, obviously, LSU has to play Alabama. There's a lot of things that have to shake out. Georgia, if they win the East, would have to play Alabama or LSU in the title game. Florida's in the mix, so you're, like you say, it's going to work itself out, but it's fascinating right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm definitely more intrigued by the playoff battle this year than I have been in recent years.
Mitch, thanks for coming by. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
All right, good luck to your
Yankees.
Yes, go Yanks.
All right, we come back, final segment, and we will make our first ticket drawing of the day from Pete and Terry's Tavern for a pair of tickets to tonight's game against the Sharks. Stay tuned. We're coming back. Max Hurst going back into my wheelhouse there with a little Blues Traveler.
Good stuff.
Very good stuff. We have just drawn our first of four winners for tickets tonight to the Predators and the Sharks. The early bird catches the worm. You can still register from now until, when is the last drawing, Chase?
I believe 4:45.
Double checking, yes, absolutely, 4:45. Our next one will be right before we get out of here.
Yep.
In our final segment of the show, around 1:45. So you have about an hour. So come on by Pete and Terry's Tavern, Predators and the Sharks. Derek Mason, Vanderbilt head football coach, joins us at 1. We'll talk more Predators next hour as well, get you ready for the game tonight. But who is our first winner? Who's going to the game? We're going to put this name in will call.
We also have another Darren update, so we'll get to that
in
a second.
Oh, that's very important.
Our winner for the first pair of tickets is Doug Condadorio. He has
All right, Doug.
He has won the tickets.
So, Doug, we will put your name at will call. You got a pair of tickets to tonight's game against the Sharks. Thank you for coming by, Pete and Terry's. By the way, I told Pete Weber this, I'm officially addicted to the beef on weck sandwich that they have here.
I got it
at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Yeah, I've got you sold on that, though.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's really good.
A couple weeks ago when we were here, and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to do it again. So it's good stuff.
I come in thinking, yeah, what am I going to get today? And I always come back to that because it's just so good.
Now, our Darren update, he just sent us a text, just left the hospital. He's going home.
All right.
Now, could that mean – you brought it up earlier.
Willis Reed. Paul Pierce.
You know, could he – at 5:59, Ryan Porth is at the desk ready to go for the pregame show, and Darren comes blasting through the doors and says, not so fast. I am here.
I'm sure Mr. Porth will be a pro. He will be ready. He is prepared to do the job tonight. But I do have a visual. Look outside along Demumbrian here, Chase, from our window vantage point of downtown. The ramp. I can see Lauren in the Paul Pierce, right, wheeling Darren up the ramp, crossing up, and then flying in right into Barrel House for the start of the show at 6:01.
Could it happen? I could see it.
Could it happen?
I could see it. Maddox on one side, Lauren on the other, pushing him up there. So we'll see. But
we shall
see. We know right now he's scheduled to be out, but you know what? He's resilient. Maybe.
Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts has come out. Thought number one.
I haven't seen this yet.
You haven't seen this? Okay. Nope. One negotiation that's hit a snag. Nashville's Roman Josi.
Ooh.
There was momentum in the summer. That stopped. Unless you're actually in the room, you're never sure if it's something serious or two sides grinding away.
Right.
But there is surprise. It isn't done yet.
I'm a little surprised it's not done yet.
I'm a little surprised, but I am definitely of the opinion that two sides grinding away.
Yeah.
I just come back to this conclusion. Everybody remembers the nightmare, who can go back that far, of Ryan Suter walking them up to the altar and then leaving last minute. There was always a sense that Ryan Suter,
his heart was not all in
staying in Nashville. I do not have that same feeling with Roman Josi. He's the captain. He wants to be here. I think over time, it is absolutely going to get done.
Yeah.
I don't know when. I think probably both sides are sitting there going, well, let's wait. I got my position. You got yours. At some point, maybe you'll come around to my side. We have time to sort this out. I don't think Roman Josi has, and we talked to him about it.
Yep.
He's not stressed. Like there are some people that say, okay, I want this done when the season starts. If it's not, then let's put it off.
Right.
That hasn't happened. No. So I think they have time. There's no deadline, really. I think this is very different than the Ryan Suter thing. I could be dead wrong, but that's my feeling of it right now.
Well, and we've seen, you know, Pecorine twice. It's been announced in November. I have a contract extension for him. So, you know, these things happen, and we didn't bring it up with David Poile today because, I mean, what else is he going to say that he hasn't said already?
Exactly.
It's just at this point now, it's just kind of when we have something to announce, we'll announce it. And I think they do get it done eventually. I understand that people are anxious is probably the best word to put it because, you know, to be fair, there are other things that David Poile needs to do. So once you get Roman Josi signed and you know how much that is going to cost, then you can start looking at some other things. Craig Smith is on the final year of his deal. Mikhail Granlund is on the final year of his deal. So those are two players that you might be looking at. It also affects, you know, what you do moving forward at the trade deadline. If you're inclined to make some sort of moves and you acquire somebody similar to Mikhail Granlund that has years left on the contract. So I understand there's a domino effect to all of it. But we're also two games into the season. It's early October. I'm not concerned as of yet that they don't have the deal done. Am I a little surprised? Sure, but I'm not concerned.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Max Hurst to come up because in the next hour we're about to talk to Derek Mason. Max has been following what was said at the press conference, and it came up in our discussion with Mitch Light. We know that there was a pretty good battle for the quarterback position between Deuce Wallace and Riley Neal. As most of you know, Neal has started all the games. And so the question came up today, right after a game where the offense in particular really struggled. Have they considered other options there? Max, what did they say?
Yeah, it looks like we had some discussion of this at the Vanderbilt press conference, which goes usually 12:15 to 12:30 on Tuesdays. So like Mitch said, like you guys said, we haven't gotten a chance to hear this yet. And we'll hear Coach Mason shortly, but Adam Sparks from the Tennessean tweets, Derek Mason told starting quarterback Riley Neal not to look over his shoulder, but backup Deuce Wallace has, quote, earned the right to see the field. Deuce is coming, which is a rather ominous final sentence there. But the fact that this was phrased the way it was, looking over his shoulder, Deuce is still the backup, he's coming, and also the fact that Riley Neal was one of the Vanderbilt players made available to the media today in the press conference means that Neal is going to start this week.
So it sounds to me like Neal is still the starter, but perhaps maybe a little bit more of if things aren't going well, let's see what the other guy's going. Now, this is also a game. This is also a game, and teams have been burned badly on this.
Right.
When you feel like you're the better team and you should win easily, and all of a sudden you're in the third quarter and it's 17-14, that's when your plan goes out the window and you say to yourself, why did I even let myself think about this? But you wonder what, in this type of game, a game where you're heavily favored but desperately have to win, what could unfold?
Right.
In that position.
I just feel like this is a situation where you have two, you don't have one. And even though Riley Neal,
and they haven't gotten, they've resisted
the
thought of putting Deuce Wallace in there.
And I know Mitch, said earlier that the times that Deuce Wallace has been in, it didn't really spark anything. Well, I don't.
But it was also kind of.
Think he's gotten a fair shake of it either. So this offense has not been what it needed to be, and I just kind of wonder if Deuce Wallace sparks that.
Anything to add, Max, before we get out of here this hour?
No, I agree with you guys. I don't think a change would be the worst thing ever at this point. It's clear that they don't have what they need to have on offense right now, but I think the game planning is also a bit at fault, too. But I'm interested to hear what Coach Mason said earlier this hour and coming up next year.
Yep, that is coming up in the next segment. We are expected to be joined by Derek Mason. We're at Pete and Terry's Tavern, so come on by for a little lunch. Drop your name in the hat for tickets to tonight's game. We have three more pairs to give away before face-off tonight. Stay tuned. This is 102.5 The Game.